Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been the leader in waterfowl conservation, with over 16 million acres of habitat conserved. DU supporters and volunteers have led the charge to fill the skies with waterfowl, today, tomorrow, and forever. You too can play a role in leaving a legacy for the future of waterfowl hunting. To find an event near you or to join our volunteer team, go to www.ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Hello and welcome to the Standard Sportsman Podcast, where your hosts Brent Birch and Kaysen Short will discuss, debate, and detail trending topics within the sport of duck and goose hunting. Brent and Kaysen have over 80 years combined chasing ducks in Arkansas with a like-minded pursuit of leaving waterfowling better than they found it. Each week, you will hear impactful interviews and engaging guests guaranteed to make you a more informed and effective hunter conservationist. Thanks for spending time with us today. Now, let us jump into today's show with the guys.
Hey guys, Brent Birch here with the Standard Sportsman Podcast, alongside co-host Kaysen Short. We're coming to you just right after Thanksgiving during the first split in Arkansas duck season. I think we've got a hot topic today that's applicable to kind of what's going on with some things, related to the water conditions in the state of Arkansas and hunting conditions, and then dragging that out through the whole season and some of the things that Case and I, we hear a lot about, but we're not really experience it, boots on the ground kind of deal because of the way we hunt. So, Kaysen, you want to kind of introduce our guests and kind of get us going today?
Yeah, this guy answers to a lot of different titles, hole runner, shot caller, and occasionally RBA. We're joined by a friend of mine, Chris Harrell. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Was that enough of an intro? Enough titles for you there?
That was great. That was good. That RBA reference. I hope there's some folks listening that picked up on that. So yeah, it's good stuff.
I hope so. That was some good times back then.
Yeah. Shout out Arkansas Refuge for them.
The Standard Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors:
Sitka Gear, turning clothing into gear. No name is more synonymous with waterproof clothing than Gore-Tex. And over the last 50 years, Gore-Tex has changed how we look at waterproof clothing. Waders have come a long way since I borrowed a pair of felt sole Converse from my mother to go on my first hunt in the woods. The Delta waders from Sitka Gear have made disposable waders a thing of the past. From the Gore-Tex lining to the breathable fabric to even the boots on them, I can stay comfortable day in and day out in the field. From high-performance base layers to windproof, waterproof outer layers, Sitka Gear has you covered.
Gunner, the team that brought you the world's best dog kennel, recently released a training bumper designed to better assist working dogs and their owners throughout the field and training obedience process. The Gunner bumper has a taper, vented design to promote proper holding and maximum breathability. It also has an adjustable, removable rope with two grip and carry positions. And because they crafted this with a proprietary rubber compound, it's sure to be a durable and reliable tool. Maybe the thing that sets it apart the most, though, is the removable cap that allows you to utilize an interior cavity for wings, feathers, and any other scent training necessity. Most of the product reviews reference that, including this 5-star review from Mark. I absolutely love my new bumpers. The ability to scent train with ease is saving me on live, frozen birds, let alone the ease and convenience of using the bumper versus a thawed bird. Now I simply take a piece of the wing and slide it into the bumper. Historically, I went through a bird every couple of days. Now one teal has lasted me 2 weeks. They're extremely versatile and, like everything Gunner, extraordinarily well-designed and constructed.
That's funny. We were talking about social media before we jumped on here, but that's kind of the original. A lot of those forums were the original social media.
Yeah. You think about, 2005 to about 2015. That was the place to be on the World Wide Web. I burned a lot of days at the office talking crap to folks on the refuge forums.
Yeah, it got a little serious at times.
No doubt.
or people took it seriously.
Yeah. I think the in crowd knew what was going on and just waiting for some new folks to jump in there and get their feelings hurt.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess this puts us with a couple guests in a row that were the very prevalent back in the forum days, because Pat Pitt, that was most people know his name from his days of being a power player on the forums.
Right. Well, and it's funny you say that. There was, I mean, I have a lot of good friends in the outdoor world that literally met from refuge forums, or, you know, even Arkansas Hunting Forum back in the day, that still keep up with, you know, through different social medias now. But yeah, that was a unique time in the outdoor world, especially in internet stuff and before the full advent of social media. But yeah, that's hilarious.
It really was unique. I mean, you think about it, it's not all that different than sharing a blind or duck clubs. You had these little groups of people that came together and had fun and were their own little tight knit group on each of these different, you know, websites. And that's what was cool about it. You had a kind of a tight group of friends there, and then you're just waiting to give somebody a hard time.
Right. Yeah. You could find your people real quick on those places.
Yeah, for sure.
Or your adversaries.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. That too. Yep. Oh, me.
Well, Chris, how was the first part of season for you guys?
It was, you know, we marked the passing of time. Obviously, start of the 2023 season here in Arkansas in the public woods, not a lot of water, not a lot of, fowl around and a lot of people. So, made it a little challenging so far as the pulling the trigger stuff goes, but, we managed to have a good time in spite of all that.
Yeah. And I think it's worth noting, anybody that's listening, you know, that may typically kind of be the case on public versus private, but our numbers were down substantially as well. So I think there's kind of a lot statewide that's going on, aside just from the public side of things. But I talked to someone else that hunts on the Lane Gill and manages in private and kind of mirrored our numbers and what we saw, you know, in the first season. They're just low numbers and for sure low water.
Well, and you just worry, is that causation or correlation there? Are we, mm-hmm. you know, it never hurts my feelings when there's not water on public and so there's not ducks. That makes sense. But then when public doesn't have water or ducks, and then you talk to folks that have water on private in the same part of the world and don't have ducks, that, you know, you kind of go, ooh, what does that mean? So, mm-hmm. Right. Hopefully they show up on the private and then we get a little water on the public and we get some trickle over.
Well, yeah, may just open the door for this conversation. I was going to ask you what you felt about, you know, kind of the season dates. I know they were going to move them back and they kept them the same. It's been kind of back and forth. And I'll preempt your answer by saying this. My concern about moving the dates back was that you would see a lot less, you know, artificial flooding on private land early in the state. And keep in mind that 90% of the habitat in the state is private. And my argument was that if we're going to open the season back a week to 10 days later, everyone's going to flood that much later. So we're kind of seeing that this year with this drought, and maybe what that causes is a lower number of birds overall in the state. And I think that would be kind of an unintended consequence of moving these season dates back. So I said a whole lot there to give you room to answer that question, but weigh in on that.
Yeah, no, you know, it was interesting this year when they floated the idea of, I guess what, moving the opener to the Saturday following Thanksgiving. I think that was the tentative plan. Am I correct there? Am I remembering this right? Yeah. And, you know, for me as a primarily public person, and again, I don't want anybody listening to go, oh, this guy thinks he's God's gift to public duck hunting. I hunt private as well. But for me, from a public standpoint, obviously, selfishly, felt like that potentially gave more days of opportunity on public that likely would more likely have water because of the current structure of how we flood some of the GTRs and the November rainfalls and all that. Selfishly, yes, I kind of like the idea of, yeah, let's try it that Saturday after. But at the same time, realizing and having learned a lot from, like you talked about, a lot of the private guys that are pumping early and holding ducks, even those Halloween ducks we always talk about. I really don't have a problem that they kept it the same, especially from an overall conservation standpoint, having water on the landscape, having a place for ducks to be, because I think what a lot of the public guys don't realize is if it wasn't for all these other places for the ducks to be, you're not going to kill any on public ever. Because the amount of pressure and the limited amount of actual acreage. If that's all there was for a duck to be on, you'd have 2 days of shooting a season and that'd be it, you know? So I guess all that to say, totally fine that they kept it the way it was. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if they tried it opening a little bit later. But I think I agree with your point too, Kaysen, that anytime the Game and Fish or the feds put in any kind of regulation, you know, there's always going to be some unintended consequences. And I think you're right that there would be that unintended consequence of affecting available habitat if we change the day, if we move the dates later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How would you feel? Yeah. How would you feel about like the split that we're in now? If we shortened that, you know, cut it in half, so it was only a 4 or 5 day split, and then took some days out in January. As far as a public perspective, do you guys usually have water first week of December? Are those usually huntable days, or are you good with it being closed right now?
I'm great with the big gap right now, just especially this year. And of course, obviously we're all prisoners of the moment. So you look at a year like this year, or even last year, where, you know, we're 2 years of below average rainfall in the state. And, you know, it's really affected, available hunting opportunity in public last year, early in the season, and this year, early in the season. So all that to say, yeah, I'm okay. I'd be okay if it didn't open again. If we don't get any rain, I don't care if they open it again December 20th. But so I think the big gap here is fine. And part of that selfishly too, for me, work-wise, it lets me get a little bit done at the office before we hit the big stretch going on the backside. But, you know, usually if we're going to have water, especially in the bottoms along the White River and all that, it's going to be late in December into January. So we like as many days available then, you know, from that December 20th to the end of January, I'll take all the days I can get then. Cause if we're going to have water in the bottoms, that's usually the most likely time.
Yeah. Now, but you know, it also, you can kind of look at it a different way. And I think this is, a valid concern, and it may influence the quality of hunting for public and private, is with this long December split, as we're trying to give a chance for 10% of the habitat to get conditions right, because alluding back to Kaysen's number that 90% is privately owned. So we take this long gap in December, and then we take this kind of phony break at Christmas. It's a split, right. But it's not, it doesn't do anything. It's not resting ducks like a split should do. And that's supposed to be the intent. This is mainly to keep people, you know, around the house at Christmas, I guess. But then we turn around and we hunt, you know, 35, 36, 37 straight days after that, with no ducks getting no break, and they've already been pressured since September. Do you think, or do you feel like it's worth it for you as a public land focus on public land hunting to still have 35 plus straight days of hunting with no break, no rest? I mean, do you think it would change the duck hunting quality if we put another little split in there, or you'd rather have all those days because that's when my conditions are the best?
Well, I mean, that's a great question and a great point. And if I can, let me step back just a second. When it comes to public land hunting in general, you know, I feel like really there's four buckets that are kind of involved here when you're thinking about public hunting, how to manage it, how to go about it. Obviously, you got the ducks, you got the waterfowl. That's an important aspect. You've got the habitat itself, the GTRs, the moist soil units, the stuff that's controlled by the feds and the state. You've got your hunters. You know, obviously, you know, as hunters, we want to do what works best for us, selfishly, probably too much of the time. And then your fourth bucket, you've got folks that are selling shells and guns and boats and all that. And so you've got these four aspects in play as you make any of these decisions. So back to your question there, Mr. Brent, for selfishly as a hunter, I'm totally okay with that 35 days or whatever, because, you know, the reality is on public, as soon as you say go on public, the pressure is going to be maximized. everybody's out there running around, beating their heads against the wall. I agree that you're not taking care of one of those other aspects of the ducks or even the habitat by just running through and going balls to the wall for that last 35 days. Selfishly as a hunter, I like it, but also as the on the conservation side, I realize you're not giving a duck a chance to keep their feet wet for more than 2 minutes anywhere on public land in the state by doing it that way. So that's tough because who do you want to cater to there? Do you want to cater to the resource or do you want to cater to the hunters? And so that, I think that's a big issue that you kind of have to work through.
Well, it's worth noting too, that we can only stop and start the season twice. So we're only allowed two splits. So in order to hypothetically have a split in January, we would have to get rid of that little Christmas deal. That's, I don't think, beneficial to waterfowl at all. And I'm kind of the persuasion that if you want to go hunt on Christmas Day with your family or anybody else, then go for it. I don't think that split is there for the hunter or for the resource. It's just arbitrarily placed there.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. I don't see the real benefit in any regard. So, I hope that gets another look. And I know that would be tough. I understand where the public land hunter is coming from as far as, hey, you know, private land guys had the first half, so to speak.
Right.
Now it's time for, us to have a shot at them. I just wonder if the quality of hunting and are we doing best by the ducks to just relentlessly go after them for that long extended period of time with no break. I mean, are we forcing them to not be in those public woods and maybe not even in the private woods because of that long stretch? So it's kind of a tricky spot. And I know it's hard to work a 60-day season into the calendar that we're dealt with, because I don't think we're going to, in any time soon, I don't think we're going to take on the issue of starting after Thanksgiving again. I don't feel like that's going to be considered again unless something drastic changes.
Sure.
And you can't take this year as, oh, see, told you we should have started later. It was 60 degrees every day and
right.
We didn't have any water. Well, I mean, that's what happened this year. Next year, we might get a 14-inch rain in October and have plenty of water, and we may get a freeze, because we've all done it. We've all hunted opening weekend with ice. We've talked about it on previous shows. Every condition you can have.
Last year.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens. Yep. So it happens. So you can't take this year as I told you so. We should be, you got to look at the long term and you got to think forward a little bit. And so that's where those dates get tricky, trying to satisfy, everybody and give everybody, opportunity, which is what it's about. And Case and I are both very pro opportunity. That's why we'd rather see the limit drop and keep the 60 days.
Yep.
That kind of logic. So, but it's always interesting from a private perspective, public perspective, what the thoughts are. Cause I realize that it's tough road to hoe there in November, and can be into December for the public land based on our current strategies. And of course, like the White River bottoms, you're relying completely on nature, yep. Mother Nature.
Yep. Well, and again, selfishly, most public guys, we look through things through a selfish lens, and all these issues become exacerbated on years like this where there is no water on the landscape. Like you said, best years in the public woods, if we can get the bottoms to flood and all the GTRs to be full by the time that second split opens, well, life is grand because the ducks have found it. They're going to use it some even with the pressure. But yeah, a year like this, if knock on wood, we get a little water here in the next 20, 30 days, and then they find it in that big stretch there at the end where you're hammering them every day, yeah, we don't see the usage like we do on years where there's water from the start. So, yeah, come on, Mother Nature, you can make us all look a whole lot better.
Yeah. That benefits everybody, obviously. And the duck, and it definitely benefits the ducks, putting water in some spaces that maybe they can get away from, every field and every block of woods that's got a blind in it.
Sure. Yeah.
So, habitat's definitely a shrinking component of all this that we all know is not going in the direction for the better currently. So Mother Nature can help a lot in that way with some rainfall and some cold weather. So but let's shift gears a little bit on this and maybe start talking about, you know, some of the hurdles or some of the issues going on with it within the, you know, the public hunting community and environment. You know, there's a, and whether how much you know about this or maybe you know a lot about it, I don't know, but I, you know, it's been brought to our attention that there's some real struggles going on, you know, in the Black Swamp regarding the constant boat traffic, because I used to hunt up there quite a bit on private land that's sandwiched in between all the public land. And, you know, everybody back then wanted to hunt the river. Well, now everybody wants to hunt the woods, which is on the, you know, kind of on the low, it's on the lower end. So the boat traffic that was going through the Game and Fish boat ramps was racing through that block of public ground or private ground in the middle of all that and causing issues. So, you know, there was a group that put together a little block of land and put a private on private property, put a public boat ramp in. And yep. That doesn't have the same rules and restrictions as to when you can be on the river and, and get out there. So it's caused a lot of issues. But, you know, I know you probably, if you're not hunting in the Black Swamp or on the Cache River and the refuge and, but you know about it. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? And how could that ever get rectified? Because they've made all kinds of attempts at different rules and you can do this, you can do that. But the boat traffic issue there seems to be pretty, pretty strong.
Yeah. So, and I guess, let me just say going forward, any information I share, we'll just pretend it's anecdotal and, you know, asking for a friend kind of stuff so that nobody at my camp gets perturbed at me for, telling tales out of school. But Black Swamp is a circus in a good way and a bad way. Like you said before, a lot of ducks get killed in the river channel. A lot of ducks get killed in the woods around it when the water's out and in the low spots when it catches water. That's tough. You know, Game and Fish, what in the last 10 or 12 years has implemented some boating regulations aimed more so at some places like Bimid and different things to kind of cut down on the boat racing, unsafe boating, different things. And here recently in the last couple of years, they've done some things because we've to kind of address boating, not so much as it affects safety to hunters, but how it affects the landscape, how it affects pressure on ducks and all that. Because for a lot of folks, we think about pressure is sitting in a hole with eight guys and shooting on ducks till 9 o'clock. We haven't always thought about the fact of a boat running through the place from 4 a.m. till noon or later, all day, every day, how that affects ducks being able to get somewhere, rest, loaf, etc. This may or may not have happened to me or somebody I know this year sitting in the channel. Actually, heaven forbid, seeing some ducks using a spot, you know, 300 or 400 yards off the, you know, off the main beaten path there, and sitting there kind of looking and going, okay, this may have some potential for the next day or two. You know, I need to look on my GPS or whatever and figure out how to get in there in the morning, what have you. And, you know, and sure enough, because there's such a circus, another boat or two pulls up, also looking at the same ducks using that same spot. And so now you're stressing, thinking, oh my, now we're going to have a problem trying to get in here and get it. And well, they eliminated the problem because they decided to run the 500 yards off the river channel right into the middle of where the ducks were sitting, and all the ducks pull up out of there. And you know, that's the end of that. We don't even have to worry about coming back. So all that to say, we've put in some things here recently about, like, you know, no boating the week before season. You know, you can't be boating in certain WMAs right now during the split. You know, you're not allowed to have a boat on it to let the ducks rest. We've implemented factory exhaust on motors, meaning you can't soup up your exhaust, make it louder, make it more intrusive in the usage. And I think those are good things. I don't know that we've gone far enough on some of that stuff. So far as cutting down on the folks that are just, and I you can use air quotes here, scouting. Some of them are just joyriding, whatever. Because like you mentioned, that's a big problem. It becomes a bigger problem on places like Black Swamp because it's not a contiguous piece that can that's all controlled by one entity. You know, there's some state-owned land in there. There's some federal-owned land in there. There's some private-owned land in there. So I really don't know the answer on that. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if Game and Fish came out and said, you know, no surface drive motors on any WMA. And I know there's some people probably listening going, oh, come on, bro. You know, I've got my whatever and I use it all the time and this and that. Great. You know, that's a slippery slope when you start limiting access. But I think for years and years, there were places on these public lands where you could boat close to where ducks were using. And you had to get out of the boat and slip in there. And sure, you may have killed them at doing whatever. But now we see boats of all shapes and sizes, but especially these surface drives, just running roughshod in 2 inches of water, any place they can get. And a lot of times it's folks that maybe don't know better. Hey, my boat can get there, so I'm going to go. But the effect that has on duck usage on these public places, I mean, it's astronomical. Just like those guys of the day that me or somebody I know watched run right off the channel 500 yards where, you know, 10 years ago, next day you'd have pulled up to the bank and you'd have walked your decoys 500 yards in there and killed ducks. Here we are running right to the ducks in a loud surface drive motor and they're gone, you know? So yeah, I may have kind of wandered there a little bit, but yes, it's a problem. I don't know. There's no one thing you can do. I think there are some things that could probably help.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's a regulation thing. It's an education thing. I don't know. I don't feel like there's enough people connecting the dots that you, yeah, we understand you've got this really nice boat and you want to run your boat. And just like you said, that the quotes, the air quotes around the scouting, it's really just fine. I got this boat and I'm going to use it. And I'm going to wander around these woods because I don't know, I'm not killing any ducks. So I'm just going to be out here and, sure, and kind of doing, this is my thing. And what's crazy about it is there's now this whole subculture related to the duck boats, which I think is great. It perpetuates the sport year round. More people are involved. I mean, you see all these, quite a few things on social media that, you know, they're doing boat races. These guys are checking these things out. They'll do sandbar party, you know, all that stuff. And I think it's cool, but you know, that stuff can't transition into duck season when we're trying to keep these ducks around. That is not the time to justify the ownership of said boat and doing that under a pretense of scouting. And that's what everybody wants to, oh man, I was scouting today. You know, it's almost like, boat ramp cred or something.
Yep.
We scouted today. We went from here to there to there to there and we didn't see whatever ducks. Or we ran up a raft of 500 ducks like you're talking about.
Yep.
And don't connect that dot that you doing all that is going to make the dot between what you scouted and saw and what you shoot the next morning. It's not going to connect. It's never going to connect.
Sure. Well, and I'm like everybody else. I love the boat ride. I like running around. I enjoy that aspect of the hunting part. And I also realize that there's a lot of guys that they know or they've heard that on public land, you're going to have to scout to kill ducks. You know, gasoline kills ducks. But they haven't put it together like you just alluded to, that scouting doesn't mean driving my boat into the middle of the raft and dropping a pin. How do we educate folks on, yeah, let's go find the ducks, but let's do it as least intrusively as possible. So as one, not to let everybody else up and down the river know exactly where I've run my mud motor to. And two, don't let the ducks know that you've run your mud motor through where they're trying to use. So, the sad thing is, I don't know whose responsibility that is to, educate. I think maybe the Game and Fish could do I don't want to say a better job, but maybe could help explain some of the reasons some of these regulations are in place. You know, we're all familiar with the, you know, 15 shell limit rule that's in place on a lot of WMAs. But, you know, for me, it makes sense, you know, 15 shells, hopefully that cuts down on sky busting. We take better shots at ducks that we've worked into range, different things. But for some people, there may be a disconnect there of why can we only take 15 shells in? Where if we were able to maybe say, this is the reasoning behind it, then heaven forbid the guy that takes 15 shells, takes 15 treetop shots at wood ducks in the first 30 minutes, maybe he goes, oh, I've only got 15 shells because I'm supposed to get the ducks down here into the hole and take a more ethical shot. So I don't know if there's something like that. This is why you have to have a factory exhaust, is because you running your freaking straight off the manifold exhaust is scaring every duck in a half mile radius when you run it down the river. You know, could we do a better job from the AGFC side or whomever to say these regulations are in place because you're hurting yourself when you do things like this?
The Standard Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors.
I've always been a fan of Yeti coolers and their drinkware. Now they've come out with a Loadout 30 Go Box. Brent, did you know they're also making those in a 15 and a 60 now?
I did. I've been a big fan of the 30. I actually carry around our mobile podcast gear in one, and then I've got another one that I use during duck season that I don't have to worry about any of my gear getting wet or dusty and dry when it hadn't rained in a while. It's an amazing product.
Yeah, so I use them a bunch. Same deal. I've got a 30 that stays in the boat, carry camera gear and all sorts of equipment in it. And it's nice to know that clients, dogs, you know, nothing's going to get it wet, going to tear it up. But the 15 has really found a spot in my arsenal as well. I switch from hunting with clients to hunting with my kids pretty frequently. And it's great to use that 15 as an ammo box. So I've got all the kids' ammo, gauge reducers, hand warmers, whatever they're going to need in one box. And all I've got to do is grab it and I'm ready to take them out in the woods.
Yeah, the Yeti Go Box is definitely the way to go and keeping organized, accessible, and protected. And it's no matter what size you pick, it's a must have for waterfowl season. Tom Beckby started in 2015 with the simple goal of making classic sporting apparel for sportsmen. Since introducing their flagship Tensaw jacket 8 years ago, they've carried that goal forward with a full range of classic wax cotton jackets, canvas and leather bags, and field gear for waterfowlers and upland hunters. You can shop for their full collection at tombetby.com, in their Birmingham, Alabama, and Wilson, Arkansas stores, and at over 150 retailers across the United States. Backed by a lifetime guarantee, find out for yourself the difference between quality over quantity. This last question on this topic, so we can talk about some of the other things you're encountering, you know, out there. But, you know, regarding this whole scouting piece, you know, there are, and see if you agree, there are some social media accounts that have kind of glorified this effort, so to speak. And definitely understand it's a requirement and there's a way to do it. And I've seen some of the accounts from what I see, it appears that they're doing it the right way. They'll park, get out, walk, get sneaky. They're not just hammering through the woods, but I don't know if that's translating to a group that, oh, scouting, man, scouting's cool. Scouting's a cool thing to do, but I'm not gonna do it that way. Cause I really don't want to get out and walk. I'm lazy. I'd rather be in my boat, whatever it is. So it's kind of glorified the scouting piece component of all this, but it's not translating that there's a right way and a wrong way to do that. I mean, do you feel like there's social media, maybe some of these brands that have really glorified the scouting effort, or not glorify, that's probably not the right word, but stress the importance of all that. Maybe they have an opportunity to do some of that kind of education component.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. You know, I think everybody can pitch in on that. But, you know, you kind of have to take a step back of whoever the hunter is in the situation. What is their end goal? You know, for me, my end goal is to slip in there, not be right in the middle of everybody, hopefully call some ducks in through the trees that, in my opinion, kill them the right way, get them down there in the decoys and shoot them over the decoys with your buddies. But you have to remind yourself, there are some guys their goal in the woods is, I want to go run my new $25,000 boat setup. I want to take some pictures to post on my socials. If I kill some ducks, great. If I don't, I'll save them for 3 or 4 days so I can put 3 or 4 days worth of ducks together to take one picture. And so even if you're able to educate folks and say, if you could be a little less intrusive, if you could be a little more sneaky, if you could ease into the woods and find the ducks without getting them up, then you would be able to kill them kill them the right way, shoot a limit, whatever your goal is. Great. We can show them that. But if that's not the end goal for that user, it's kind of a moot point. Yeah, that's cool. But I'd rather just run my boat right up to the hole and shine on my lights and play my songs until shooting time and go home. You're kind of beating your head against the wall, I'm afraid, sometimes. So that's the hard part of it.
Yeah, totally agree. It's tough. There's not an easy solution for sure.
Well, Chris, let's dive into the other massive complaint that we hear all across the state all year, every year. You hear it from, you hear one side from residents, you hear another side of the argument from non-residents, but let's talk about some overcrowding and maybe some stuff that you are seeing in person.
Yeah. Well, and that, again, I'm just like every other public duck hunter. You know, I'm selfish. I wish everybody else that hunted public got the flu tomorrow and they had it till February 1st. I mean, it's hard to look at any of these situations, these issues from that 30,000 foot view. What's good for everybody? Because everybody that hunts public, and I include myself in that, we tend to want what's best for us. And so as a lifelong Arkansas resident, when that came down the pipe, what's it been, 4, 5, 6 years ago now that they, so far as the non-resident part, when the Game and Fish started playing with different ways to limit access to non-residents, I like to think that as a hunter, I didn't really like the idea, limiting access, for a couple of reasons. One, you know, you've got guys in surrounding states that are coming over here hunting 60 days a year on the public that are spending their tax dollars, that are buying their license and buying their stamp. And, you know, if that dries up and blows away for them, that access, we don't ever want to lose hunters. We need as many under the umbrella as we can have. And then the selfish aspect of that is, obviously, where we're located, we hunt a lot of federal ground, and those non-resident bans that apply, I say bans, that limited non-resident access that applied to some of the state stuff did not apply to the federal stuff. So as that was coming along, you know, the wheels are turning in my head of, okay, all that's going to do is we're going to move the pressure from some of these state places to some of these federal places that are closer to home for me that I like to access a little bit more. And we found that to be true. You know, 6, 8, 10 years ago, any little low spot out in some of the federal places up and down the White and the Cache River, you know, show up at 5 o'clock. If somebody's at this one, go to the next one. You're fine. Well, you know, just unbelievable, especially the last 2 or 3 years, these off the beaten path beaver ponds and low places in the slough, you know, you show up at 5 o'clock or whatever, and there's two trucks there from out of state hunting this place, which they have every right to do so, that are on this federal stuff now because, you know, the state stuff's closed right now or whatever. So back to the unintended consequences thing. Sure, I think limiting non-residents on some of the WMAs, we've hunted them at times when it's no non-residents, and it was noticeably less people. It contributed to our success. It accomplished its purpose in those places. I don't think that it's limited the pressure or the overcrowding throughout the public land in the state of Arkansas. It's just moved it around or limited it to those times when non-residents are able to be on the state-owned pieces. Poor non-residents, you know, they're going to be the first ones to get limited, obviously, in the state of Arkansas. Not saying it's a bad thing, but it's probably helped in certain places at certain times. I don't know that it's helped on the overall picture of overcrowding and access.
Yeah, because we've gotten that feedback and commentary from, you know, people in our networks too, that all that pushing them to those certain segments during the season on state-owned property has definitely caused an issue on the federally managed ground, to where, you know, this contingent of non-residents is going to hunt in Arkansas every day they possibly can. It fits their schedule. And if that pushes them into federal ground, it pushes them to, you know, lease property, to make up for the days that they can't hunt the wildlife management areas they're used to. It's created a whole nother kind of issue that I know the Game and Fish is aware of. I know the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is aware of, and they're evaluating some ideas and options. So, you know, next time the Game and Fish does a survey that asks some of these questions, I think it's important for people to provide feedback if they're what they're wanting to, the direction they're wanting to go is in the right direction, because they're aware it's a problem and that this has spilled people over and really cramped the federal ground when, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's not a plethora of water in the White River bottoms. And yep. and now it's a whole other thing that it's caused. So it's kind of tricky in that regard. And that, but what's interesting, and this is a statistic that Case and I were provided, and you talked about when the non-residents are not allowed to hunt in there, how less the crowd is. It's very manageable. It's very totally different ball game.
Sure.
I think that's because there are not that many public land duck hunters in Arkansas, based on the numbers that we've been provided. It was kind of shocking that it is as low as it is. It's estimated there's only 5,000 public land duck hunters that use state-owned WMAs in state. There's about 5,000 in state, and there's about 5,000 non-residents. So mm-hmm. about 10,000, which is about 10% of our duck stamp sales, are using the WMAs. And obviously some of these WMAs are much smaller. Biomeat is obviously expansive, and can accommodate more hunters. But you know, some of these others are smaller, and I can see where that situation would seem very crowded when both are allowed in there. But with that low a number of state, you know, in-state residents hunting state-owned property, that's probably why it feels so comfortable in there during all right. that. But that, on the other hand, that's a huge component of our economics and tourism and everything else you want to look at. Duck stamp sales, you know, keeping these little towns alive. You know, it's kind of on one hand, it's a necessary evil. On the other hand, we got to find the right model, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Sure.
That can handle those things and push people around and have opportunity to hunt comfortably where they can and where they can't, and have a good experience when they come to our state, and be able to go home and tell people that, you know, Arkansas is everything I dreamt it was. Sure. Versus a lot of people sent home and, you know, I couldn't even get off at the boat ramp, or I couldn't even find a place to hunt. People wanted to beat me up. You know what? All the right, crazy right. stuff we
yeah.
all hear about.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, and kind of jumping on that point, you know, I want to give the Game and Fish credit that I think they're aware of these issues, and I think they are trying to find the best ways to kind of rein some of the bad things in and try to encourage some of the good things. And I think they've done a better job in the last few years of, okay, we have an idea, we'd like to try this. And I think they're starting to realize we don't have to roll it out to every WMA in the state. Let's try this in these two or three WMAs. If it works well, great. If it doesn't, no big deal. And if we try it in eight WMAs and it works well in these four, but not in these four, okay, let's adjust. And I know that kind of convolutes the regulation books, and it kind of makes it difficult on the officers, the game and fish guy, the game wardens and all that. But I think we need to keep doing things, trying things in certain spaces, and realize that what's good for Bimita may not be what's good for Bell Slough, or what's good for yeah. Dagmar yeah. may not be what's the right thing for Black Swamp. You know, over Thanksgiving break, you know, I was I was back home in the middle of the week and thought, well, I may go in Bell Slough here by my house. I may go in and just check one little spot that we've killed a few at different times and just to go. Well, fortunately, I pulled up Game and Fish website and looks, you know, Bell Slough this year and some others, you know, it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday access. Well, fortunately, I pulled that up Tuesday night before I went in there on the Wednesday when it was illegal. But that was just kind of to reiterate of, okay, place like Bell Slough that's not as big, doesn't get as much pressure, but not as many places to be. You know, how is this working? Are we able to quantify? Is this, given the ducks and the resource a couple of days off, is that contributing to more usage and more hunter success and more hunter satisfaction? So all that to say, Game and Fish, great job. Keep trying new things. But just because it doesn't work at one spot, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater everywhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they already are. Obviously, there are different rules around. So I think that's very, very important. We even talk about it, and not to go off on some tangent, but, you know, we get handed down recommendations for, you know, seasons and limits and all that from the Mississippi Flyway Council. And you take specklebellies, for example. Well, the whole Mississippi Flyway gets handed down the same options and opportunities, but nobody in current day hunts them and pressures them like we do. So it's almost like we need to have some different rules maybe than everybody else because just, you know, how speckle bellies are treated here in Arkansas versus how they're treated in Mississippi or even modern day Louisiana. So it almost kind of correlates to looking at each WMA in a different way. And, you know, maybe some need to be closed during the week. Maybe some need to, you know, allow boaters out at this time. Some need them at this time. Some need 15 shells. Some don't. Some need spinners, maybe some don't, you know, you know, whatever the formula ends up being, but I'm just thinking of the different rules that are in place, WMA to WMA. But, I think they're willing to experiment because I think it's important. Like I said a minute ago, the brand and the experience we're trying to create, we got to get back to a model and a methodology that allows more good experiences than bad. And I'm not sure we're there right now.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and just a side note, talking about different ones, for how many years, even though it was a 4-mallard limit in the state of Arkansas, it was a 3-mallard limit on Bimita. So that was for, what, 10 years or so. We went back to 4. I'm not sure who did the whining and what squeaky wheel got that changed back. But for me and for a lot of the folks that in my immediate circle, and obviously it may be an echo chamber, I was a little disappointed on that one going back to 4, because then here we are, you know, if you've had a great day and you could have been out of the woods at 8 o'clock, now we're sitting there till 10 to kill 2 more ducks to finish out a 4-man limit or whatever it is. You know, I think sometimes when things change, that goes back to, let's communicate why we're changing it. And while we're trying it a different way, and if I got made commissioner for a day, we'd go back to a 3-mallard limit on every state-owned ground in the state of Arkansas. That's just a side note. I don't think there's any plans to make me a commissioner anytime soon. But, you know, stuff like that, let's communicate it too, of why did we do it this way before? Why did we change it back? And what are we looking for to help justify the reason we're doing it the way we are?
Well, Chris, I'm glad you brought up the kind of the communication side of this. I don't know if you know about the advisory committees that Director Booth has kind of started. Mm-hmm. Brent and I both are chairing one of those. Mine happens to be Habitat and Access. So look for some phone calls or text messages in the future to get some feedback on some of these things, because that's, I know the commission is aware of the, I guess, communication issue or maybe the disconnect between the decisions and the hunter. And that's part of what these committees are kind of designed for, is to be more of a conduit from one side to the other and back and forth. So hopefully that will improve the experience overall in the state. And to your point about managing places differently, I think that's a good thing. Now, I wouldn't want to get to, you know, like a Missouri situation where we had zones, because I think when you start going into zones, you just flood one zone with hunters and they migrate to the next zone and to the next zone. So you end up with a lot more pressure. But I would be completely on board with experimenting with, say, a public versus private framework. You know, if we wanted to open private early and then keep public open later, I think there's some situations there where that could work. And it could even be that, you know, if private land is closed in January, now you're giving some of those public birds a place to go rest and keep them kind of fresh. It would be worth the experiment to see how that impact overall satisfaction on the public side of things. But I definitely think micromanaging could be a very useful tool, to your point.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, it would. And again, I think the important part, yes, micromanage. If you need to test something out, test it out on a couple of them. Don't roll it out to everything to see what's going to stick. If it works well, expand it. If it doesn't work well, shrink it. If it works well here, but not here, keep it here. Keep it, and I think they're doing a better job of that. I really do. And, you know, a good job with the W. Rice thing too. What a great way to kind of expand opportunity to Joe Blow. And at the same time, what a great way to get some of these farmers and landowners throughout the state more involved in providing some habitat for the waterfowl. Because I think what a lot of folks don't realize, and if you're not familiar with the W. Rice program, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a way you apply weekly. And there's, I think they've expanded it up to like close to 5,500 acres of different, basically farmland, flooded fields, most of them, that Joe Blow, you get drawn for this permit through the Game and Fish. You get to go hunt it on the weekend. It's a great opportunity. I've heard a lot of good feedback. I've not got drawn for one yet. I've been putting in this year. I only put in a couple times last year. Talked to some guys, said they had some good hunts on it, said it was a great way to show up somewhere 20 minutes before shooting light, no pressure, put the decoys out, hunt. What happens, you go to the house, everybody's happy. I think a lot of folks don't realize, though, that even though that's able to be hunted, what, one or two days a week, that water and habitat's there for the ducks throughout the week. So kudos to the Game and Fish and everybody that put that thing together. And y'all can expand on that some bit, but I want to make sure folks are aware that that's also an option for the public land guy. I think the permit cost is like $5 to apply. So check that on the Game and Fish website.
Yeah, it's a great tool. And it's my understanding that those fields, farms and fields that are enrolled in that are typically adjacent to a wildlife management area. So it's a spot where the ducks can leave WMA, find some food, find some rest during the week, and then can keep them in the area and keep them, transecting, from fresh habitat to WMA and back and forth again. So, I mean, it's a great concept and from all indications, it's going really well. And that was a definite feather in the cap. And, whoever came up with that idea and got it going and moving forward, because that's been a great piece, especially for folks that want to take, a younger kid that's not ready to get in the middle of boats going every direction and having to fight for this or that, that you can, like you said, show up 20 minutes beforehand and go at it and know you've got this field this day. And this is a setup. We don't have to worry about all the other pieces that go along with trying to find a spot to hunt in a WMA, especially on a crowded weekend or something like
right.
that.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes us public guys, we're bad about bashing the Game and Fish about everything. So let's recognize when we get things right. Let's applaud those efforts and let's hope that they keep the hits coming on stuff like that. So good job on that.
Well, Chris, we've talked about a lot of things that garner a lot of attention from the public side. What are some things that you can think of that maybe most people aren't aware of? What are some other issues that the public hunter faces in Arkansas?
Oh, that's a good question. I think a couple things we kind of touched on a little bit earlier. The social media aspect of duck hunting in general, and especially the beat your chest aspect of public land duck hunting, I think that's a bad spiral that a lot of folks get wrapped up in. I would encourage folks to say, let's measure what metrics, or let's be careful what metrics we measure our success off of as public land hunters. Yep. I love it when I get to go out there with 5, 6, 8 buddies and shoot a limited ducks in the public woods. That's awesome. But I want to make sure that we love it for the experience. We love it for the fact that we're out there with friends and we're fellowshipping and we're doing things that not a lot of folks get to do. And it's not the success is not measured by the fact that we cussed out some other group 100 yards down through the woods, that we cut somebody off on the way to the hole, that we sky busted ducks so we could finish our limit. Let's just be careful that we don't let the chest beating and the social media bragging and all that be the driving factor in what makes us public land duck hunters. That's not something that can be regulated. That's not something that can be policed on a game and fish level or on a federal level. That's something that each of us has to do as an individual and or a group, whoever you're hunting with. So I just encourage folks, just slow down and enjoy it. Don't get so worked up in having to get the pile pick and get your Instagram reel or story and all that stuff just right so that everybody knows that you're the best thing since sliced bread. So just be careful with that. I think some folks, hopefully as they get a little age, get a little wisdom, get a little more experience, I think there's a natural progression there. You know, I think sometimes some of the younger guys out there in the woods kind of get a bad rap that may be guilty of that a little bit more. And so I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush there, but just encourage folks, examine your motives as you're going through, especially you public land guys. I'm trying to think the other thing, and this may be a little bit of a hot button topic. We've got the youth and veteran hunt coming up here in early December, one day. And then there's another day, I believe, in February.
That's right. Yeah, it's a Saturday.
Right? So this Saturday, looking forward to taking one of my sons this weekend. Love that we have that opportunity. I wouldn't mind seeing the powers that be maybe reexamine that February date. You know, for years it was just a Saturday and Sunday in December during the split. And we've put it back to that February date. And so we've been on that Saturday the last couple of years, and it's really cold and ducks are paired up. And we've made the decision that we're, you know, federal framework wise, we're ending the season the end of January, and we're giving the ducks a break and letting them get paired up and get ready to go back north and make babies. But oh, by the way, let's go hammer on them one more day. And I know that not a lot of folks go and do it then, but I'd love for the Game and Fish to examine pulling that day out of February and moving it back during one of the other splits. Give us the 2 days, but do it somewhere else. That's just kind of an odd outlier there.
Yeah, we've heard that one before.
Yeah. And y'all can comment on that as well, but that just as a, whether you're hunting those days on public or private, that just seems, it's been a little odd sitting out there in February the last couple of years going, one, it's cold for my 10-year-old. Two, right, we're not having a whole lot of success. And three, are we doing ducks any favors? Yeah.
Wait a minute. You're trying to tell me that it is not barrel burning action in February?
Yeah.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Those two young drakes we kill every year that hadn't found a girlfriend yet, about the only thing that saved the show. So you don't even get to see you don't even get to see any courting flights that time of year. So, So anyway, would love to see them reexamine that. And I may have wandered a little there on the initial prompt from you, Kaysen, but,
No, that's all right. Well, I've got some thoughts on that too. I agree. February, look, I've got no secret, a number of young kids. February is cold. The duck hunting is not good, contrary to popular belief. I think that's a wasted attempt at a youth day. And I don't really like seeing them over the split either. If the idea there is to rest burrs, let them do their thing, then we really shouldn't be chasing it then either. I think, you know, look, if we're going to have to close season over Christmas, maybe that's a good time to have a youth, you know, consecutive days. Let's make it 2 days because you can get more out of it. You know, you're going to go to camp, you're going to spend the night, you know, one day is over and gone before you know it. Or even consider maybe having an early season in November before duck season opens. I mean, we've got early migrators, they're landing in the decoys, they're easier to kill than, you know, a paired up mallard in January. So I think there's other ways we could execute that and make it more comfortable and successful for the kids. And after all, if it's a youth day, should be kids first.
Sure. But. Yep. Well, I like to think I do a pretty good job of taking my guy anytime it's safe and easy, but for all those parents out there, don't forget it's not illegal to take your kid every other day of the season. So don't feel like you can only take them on the youth day. So just a little plug there.
Yeah. Valid point for sure. And that's interesting. You know, I don't have kids that are, at that level anymore. Mine are way older, but yeah, I can appreciate trying to get them out there when they're comfortable and can have a good experience versus, you know, Dad, I'm cold and we're not seeing any birds. I mean, that's not what we're trying to do. You're trying to hook somebody.
Yep.
And that's not going to hook them. So that's going to be tough. But let me ask you this, because you made a comment earlier that you hunt private and public. Mm-hmm. and we've all acknowledged that there is this macho-ness, or I don't know how to describe it, but I've been in countless scenarios and situations where when somebody introduces themselves, they introduce themselves as, you know, John Doe, I hunt the public land, yada, yada, yada. So, I mean, they almost like have to throw in there that they hunt public land. So, And then you see the commentary on social media. You know, I've had Instagram posts of this regard. I'm sure Kaysen has that. You know, it'll be a clip of hunting on private property, but it gets criticized and critiqued by some guy that hunts public. Oh, it must be nice to have, you know, whatever water, ducks this time of year, so on and so forth. So what it's done within the sport that needs people, regardless of where they hunt, to be pulling on the same end of the rope, because the sport needs all of us. The ducks need all of us. The habitat needs all of us fighting for the same things, to help keep this train moving down the tracks. But how do we close the gap in your eyes? How do we close the gap between this prideful public land? I'm a public land duck hunter and the private land hunting contingency that also exists, which, alluding to my number earlier that we've been told, it's 90% are hunting private ground. 90% of our duck stamp sales are hunting private ground. So that's the overwhelming majority. So I don't know if it's a, you know, feel like they're short, you know, shorthanded in this fight. And even though it's not really a fight, I mean, it's duck hunting. But, you know, I kind of went long winded there. But in your eyes, do you see that? Do you feel there's a divide? And then if you do feel that way, then how do we close it, since you're experiencing both?
Yeah, well, and I would agree with you that a lot of public guys, myself included, you wear it like a badge of honor. But at the same time, yeah, you have to get past that of, like you mentioned, we're all pulling on the rope together. We need everybody under the same umbrella. I don't know, for those guys that lead with that and have a chip on their shoulder, I don't know if you ever get them to see the big picture. I really don't. And the thing is, that's okay. I don't think you have to waste your time trying to get them on board seeing the big picture, because for a lot of them, it's just not going to happen. And full disclosure, guys, if I hit the lottery tomorrow, instead of 5,000 public land duck hunters next year, there will be 4,999. I mean, that's just count on that.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of things that go into that chip on the shoulder. And I'll be real honest with you, and this is something I struggle with a little bit. A lot of these public guys, the ones that have just a little bit of knowledge, not saying that that's a bad thing, but you look at the decision makers, the commission level and all that, and like most government appointed officials, there's a feeling for a lot of the public land guys of, these guys are in this spot because it's bought and paid for. And I don't want to ruffle any feathers and stir it up right there, but I think some of the communication part would help by saying, okay, these guys are appointed here because they have a outdoor background. They want to do good for the state. They want to do good for the resource. Don't don't be so dismissive for all of us, the poor unwashed masses, thinking that everything that trickles down from the commission down is ivory tower stuff. You got to get over that mindset. And this is not me. I'm not saying we should vote commissioners in or anything like that. I'm totally fine with appointing commissioners. But I think, just like Kasen mentioned earlier, having these advisory boards and different things, we've got to continue to educate and show the big picture so that hometown hero, public land duck hunter guy realizes that, yeah, we're all on the same team. We just may be playing in different stadiums. So I don't know if that's a good answer to that question. And I don't know if there is a good answer to that question. But yes, I will acknowledge that I've seen the same thing. I do think that's an issue. We may just have to beat some folks around the head and shoulders and kind of help them see the light on some of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, I think it's often misunderstood. And it comes back to that communication thing. I think a lot of public hunters don't understand how much thought and effort and decisions are made on their behalf. And it's easy, it's easy to not see that, not understand that. And that's where it's a slippery slope on the commissioner's side, that we not allow it to be a good old boy network, or, they need to be appointed for what they bring to the table. And I think they should maybe could do a better job highlighting that. And again, all comes back to communication, but I think, and you can correct me if this is wrong, Chris, but I feel like a lot of the public guys that are not ever going to be reached, I think the issue and maybe where they're coming from is that they see some of these quote unquote private people on social media who do nothing but, manufacture pictures and results and beat their chest and run their mouth about all this stuff. They don't see the other guys that are working 12 months out of the year, pouring their capital and their effort yes. and all that into it. They don't know how much good the private does for the public. They only see the guy who's screaming and hollering about how, he's got all the ducks in the state and kills them all.
Yep.
So as a whole, public, private, we are our own worst enemies.
Amen. Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. A lot of truth to that. Because it's, getting back to the, not recognizing or maybe not seeing, connecting the dots between, a lot of commission business, that's decided by them is in favor of the public. The reason why we have such a long split in December is for the public land duck hunter.
Mm-hmm.
It is giving the WMAs a chance to catch water and to create those opportunities. There's no other reason, because everybody sitting on that commission has ducks in November. They do. So their best quality hunting is going to be November and December, but we're sitting out for 2 weeks. That is to benefit the public land hunter, which I think is great. I want the public land to have opportunity, because that's what keeps people in the sport. That's what keeps people buying duck stamps. That's what keeps people providing Pittman Robertson dollars, all the things that make habitat conservation, ducks do better, requires hunters. It doesn't require less hunters. That's selfish. I want less people in the field so I can have better opportunity. Well, that's gonna have some consequences to it.
Yeah,
big consequences. Yeah, it would run out pretty quick. So we got to have both, and we rely on both. That's why public land hunters are so important, because of that piece. Not everybody can afford a lease. Not everybody can afford a piece of ground. That's why those things exist. So they will continue hunting ducks and being providers, givers to what we all want. Private land hunter, public land hunter. We all want more ducks. We all want more successful hunts. We all want to see more ducks. And that's why it requires all of us. The sport wouldn't survive with just private land hunters. It wouldn't survive with just public land hunters. It would fail miserably.
Yep. Agreed. And back to your point too about Joe Blow with a chip on his shoulder, when the Game and Fish or whomever does a good job of educating, we have to remember that the ones that are doing the most griping and complaining refuse to be educated. So, when we changed the water management structure on GTRs 4 or 5 years ago, Game and Fish had pamphlets and PowerPoints and meetings and illustrations and videos and explained hydrology and how trees absorb water and what why this tree looks the way it does, because it's had too much water. And any they answered any and every question. They explained it totally from top to bottom. It made great sense on why they were changing their water management plans on GTRs. And yet you still had the loud vocal contingent of goobers screaming and moaning because either one, they refused to be educated, or two, they were too selfish to see that it was for the greater good for those GTRs. So again, just to kind of tie a bow on that, don't waste your time on the folks that don't want to see the light, but be sure and provide an opportunity for everybody to learn and know what's going on, the ones that actually want to be educated on that stuff.
Yep. Yep. Solid point.
Well, Chris, I feel like might as well take this opportunity for you to tell us about your side hustle, your main business. Talk to us about Harrell & Sons and what all you've got going on there.
Oh, thank you for that. Harrell & Sons, just a little side hustle that waterfowl related, do some wax canvas and some leather products, some vests and bags and carriers, different things, just something kind of done on the side. It's been fun, neat way to meet people in the industry and kind of dip your toe in the waterfowl world. HarrellandSons.com. Just we are as small batch as they come. When you go on there, don't be frustrated because 80% of stuff's always sold out. And that's because we don't make a whole lot of it. And just do a little bit to pay for our shells and a little bit of the gas when we're running our mud motors through rafts of ducks all over the woods. So
it's made in the USA, right?
Absolutely. You better believe it.
Yep. Made in the USA. Yeah. And you guys help us stay legal every day. So we use your duck totes to abide by the law. So
there you go. Keep it up. Appreciate that. Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
All right.
Well, very cool. Yeah. This is exactly the conversation we wanted to have and get some perspective without, you know, going a rant direction. Because I know those are easy to do and some of the things going on, especially with a tough start to this duck season. But we appreciate you coming on here and kind of sifting through some of these things that the two of us, you know, we given these advisory council roles want to know and hear about, and we do through other networks, but it's good to, you know, just keep getting more perspective and more input. That way we can be that, because that's what we're charged with. We're charged with being the conduit between someone like you to the Game of Fish director, who is going to convey that to commissioners when they get ready to make regulations. And we're coming up on a regulation year. May of 2024 will be the next 2 years worth of regulation. So that, you know, now's the time to get this feedback and look for solutions, not just bitching and complaining. We've got to look for solutions that make sense and are realistic and find something that works for all of us. And like I said, try to close this gap a little bit.
Yep. Well, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate what y'all are doing and have enjoyed a lot of the episodes y'all put out so far. And, you know, it's nice that you got some of the unwashed masses like me on here every once in a while too. So I think appreciate y'all for the opportunity.
Yeah, you bet. Well, that'll do it for this episode. We thought it was timely to do this during the split and maybe get some positive momentum for everybody going into December when we get going again here in Arkansas. But we appreciate you listening. We, of course, appreciate all of our sponsors. If you want to check us out on social media, it's at The Standard Sportsman. The website's also www.thestandardsportsman.com. And tell all your friends about this podcast as we grow this audience and try to get more good topics out there for duck hunters to talk about. We'll see you next time. Thanks.
The Standard Sportsman podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors.
From the people who brought you the first motion goose decoy in 1994 comes the first motion silhouette decoy. Once again, Higdon Outdoors has changed the game.
I got a chance to get my hands on some of these the other day, and I was blown away. When I first heard they were in the works, I was a little skeptical. I didn't really see how you could have all the benefits of a silhouette, like lightweight decoys, the space savings, the ease of setup, and not lose something with adding a motion system. But as soon as I put the first stake in the ground, I knew they got it right. These rigs have amazing motion in the lightest breeze, and they sacrifice nothing. I've been chasing specs for over 3 decades, back when a spec call was even hard to find. It's amazing how far we've come in spec hunting, and Higdon Outdoors continues to pave the way.
Revolutionary footwear from Light Boots, the lightest waterproof boot ever made. Your first hands-on feed-in introduction to Light Boots is a jaw-dropping experience. With a pair of men's 11s weighing in at less than 26 ounces, Light Boots are the benchmark in ultra-lightweight toughness, next-generation comfort, and ease of use. Whether you're all-weather hunting and fishing, farm and ranching, or home and gardening, Light Boots are guaranteed game changers. Now available in youth sizes.